Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Well, when I first saw the news of a young John Chow who died trying to reach these people on this island called Sentinel, and it looked great. I mean, he's risking his life. He's just trying to tell them about Jesus. And then it got a little uncomfortable because he's violating the law, whether that was international law or local law, I'm not sure. But violating the law, this is a protected group of people, whereas they've been really untouched by the world for, I think, at least 1,000 years, some crazy information like that. And then it's like, okay, then he's breaking the law. He's disregarding the law to go share the gospel of Jesus Christ. And at that point, I was kind of, well, that's a little more interesting here, where we have something, a dictate in place by Caesar, and we're supposed to submit to the governing authorities, right, and render unto Caesar what is Caesar's, all that good stuff, which the Bible clearly points us to. Yet, are we supposed to submit ourselves to the governing authority and not share the gospel? Because if here in my context, here on this radio show, if they ever told me, if the FCC, the government, ever said, hey, you know what, we've determined that sharing the gospel because you're telling people they don't believe what you believe, they're going to go to hell forever, that's hate speech, Mr. Noble, and that's punishable by law. You can't do that anymore. Well, in that point, I would refuse to obey that. I would come on the air the next day, and I would violate the law. I don't know if I would do it gleefully, but I would do, but I would do it faithfully, and I would choose the higher law. But when this situation with young John Chow, really interesting to look at that, and as we've gotten more information, because his parents have released things from his journals, it's really a good time to be able to talk about the gospel, spreading the gospel, the Great Commission, foreign missions, and is there a right way, a wrong way? When you're trying to share the gospel, he's just trying to see people that are destined for hell not go to hell and have a chance to repent and understand the gift of Christ through the cross. And so today we'll talk to our good friend, no stranger to Theology Thursday here on the Steve Noble Show, Dr. Scott Hildreth, Assistant Professor of Global Studies and the Director of the Center for Great Commission Studies. Scott, how are you? Welcome.
Man, back. I'm great. Thank you, Steve, for having me here.
You're very welcome. Great to have you. And so kind of what's your reaction? Am I always, when I'm talking to all of my seminary friends, I always imagine when things are happening in the news, my first thought is always, well, I wonder what my seminary friends are thinking. As if you don't kind of react to things like the rest of us do. But for you, as somebody that's been on the foreign mission field, right, this is a big part of what God has called you into. What was your first reaction to this story?
You know, it's amazing. It was a very shocking story. And I put myself in a couple of different places. You know, I'm a parent now of grown kids who are thinking about going on the mission field. And so I ask myself the question, man, what if that were my son? What if that were my daughter? How would I feel at that point? You know, every year we send dozens of students overseas in different places. And so you think then, is that response, man, how would I feel then?
Yeah.
And then there's this connection between his story and the story of Jim Elliot and, you know, the Tip of the Spear movie, Through Gates of Splendor books and Elizabeth Elliot. And so there's that connection. And so there's just this whole almost nostalgic, and then thinking through, man, what happened? And there was a whole lot of confusion because the story at the beginning just didn't make any sense to me. As I read it, I thought, this is – something is missing here. This is just an odd missionary story for the contemporary world.
Yeah, he's got obviously he's got a sense of adventure. If you look at any of his social media stuff, the guy's been all over the world.
Right.
He's pretty young. I think he's in his late 20s.
Late 20s, yeah, 26, 27, something, yeah.
And yeah, as a parent, I thought, like you did, Scott, I was like, well, what if one of my kids were off gallivanting around the world working for some mission organization and said, Dad, I think I'm going to go try to contact these people. Who are these people? Well, they're actually off limits. The government right. says we're not going to go there, but these people are going to go to hell. And how can I sit here and do nothing? And I'm like, yeah, but are you risking your life? And, you know, you can't risk your life for Jesus who died for you and all that kind of stuff going on. And I was conflicted at first because on one side into the Jim Elliot thing, I'm like, what a great example.
Right.
But then as I found, okay, now there's laws involved, and goodness gracious, does the spread of the gospel give us license to violate every law, to right. not render unto Caesar what is Caesar's, or submit to the governing authorities? And of course, as we found out more information, and from his journal, which his parents started to release,
that's right.
it changed kind of quickly, and we went from he's just half-baked, not doing right. thinking or doing anything, but there was actually a progression here, which we'll talk about because you wrote an article mm-hmm. on about it, which is really helpful. This is like one of his first journal things he said in here. After arriving, it's from an article in Liberty Council, his journal expressed his human emotion as he approached a group of Sentinelese. He wrote, "I regret I began to panic slightly, and I saw them string arrows in their bows. My thoughts were directed toward the fact that I was almost in arrow range. I backpedaled facing them, and then when they got the fish, I turned and paddled like I'd never in my life back to the boat. I felt some fear, but mainly was disappointed and some other things there." But how did you begin to kind of work through what happened to young John Chow?
You know, as I thought through this, there were a couple things that I wanted to process. First, I want to be, and we have to be very clear, that nothing that we say should be viewed from a Christian perspective as mocking or critical of a guy who really believed that he was doing what the Lord was
yeah,
asking him to
clearly.
Do.
Clearly.
I think as you read his journals, he seems to be led by the Lord. He's convicted that people need to hear about Jesus. And so nothing we say needs to counter that. At the same time, as I looked at what he was doing as a missionary, as a missiologist, as one who teaches and trains missionaries to go out, I looked at the story and I thought, man, there are just some pieces to this thing that just don't seem to be well planned out, well thought out. There were some things that it made me ask, was he well trained? Was he equipped? You know, in the beginning, we didn't know any of that.
Right,
later,
right.
People from his organization have come out and said, no, he did these things. But even at that, I just have to ask the question, was it the wisest way to go forward? I wouldn't want to call a guy a fool. The Bible's pretty clear you don't do that, but was this the wisest? Was it the only way forward?
Yeah.
Was it necessary? I think there are a whole lot of questions that start swirling in my mind as a missiologist, as one who teaches missionaries, to just say, I think there may have been some things that I wrote in my articles. I think his evangelistic zeal contributed to some misguided missiological steps.
Yeah. So it's zeal without wisdom, which can be dangerous.
It feels that way. Yeah, yeah. I'm not in his shoes. I wasn't in the conversation
yeah.
leading up to that point. Had he been one of my students, we would have had a whole lot of conversations. Had I been on that boat, I would have done everything I could to stop him from going at that
yeah.
point. I just think that what you're trying to do is not what was going to happen.
How did your seminary students react?
It's been mixed. I mean, there have been a lot of people who've asked a lot of questions. I haven't had a whole lot of people just say, this is what I think. What they have said is, this is confusing. Would we do this? Should we do this? You've got questions about the state of the unevangelized, ethical questions
right,
that you bring
right.
up. So there's been a whole lot of just discussion points about it.
And we can transfer that into a workplace here in the United States of America.
So, yeah.
When they say, no, you're not allowed to proselytize in here. And you're like, I'm surrounded by people that are going to hell. How can I not say something?
What will make a man so bold? Make a woman lay her own life down. Jesus Christ.
Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show, with our friends here at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary, as we are all every Thursday, which is Theology Thursday. If you're newer to the show, we've been doing Theology Thursday for about 4 years. Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary, which is the largest seminary in the East Coast, one of six Southern Baptist seminaries in the country, one of the preeminent seminaries on the face of the planet, and where I've had different studio locations for the last about a year and a half, 2 years now. The studio location's been right here on campus, but we've been doing Theology Thursday as a way to tap into all that God has placed out here, everything that he's deposited, all this wisdom and knowledge and these great teachers, because usually it's just, well, maybe it's the small groups or Sunday schools that they teach in their local churches, but it's the students here, seminary or the college students. And most of us never get access to that level of teaching, but God has just allowed us to keep this door open every Thursday and access people like my friend Scott Hildreth today to help us kind of wade through some of these deeper issues, whether they're, in this case, we're doing something topical. We're talking about something that happened in the news back on November 17th, the young John Chow, who was trained as a missionary and was trying to reach the Sentinelese people, which is over near, off the coast of what? Where is it again?
Oh, it's between India and Thailand. So you think the Bay of Bengal, right?
Okay,
there.
Got it. So he's over there and he wants to reach these people. These people are, by the government, off limits. They haven't touched the outside world, literally, and I think at least 1,000 years. And he had to get fishermen to break the law, and he got over there. And eventually that got him killed. They killed him with bow and arrow on the beach. Sounds a lot like, of course, Jim Elliot and the story we all know, the tip of the spear and all that stuff. But the implications, was it wise? Was he foolish? Was he faithful? And what about for us? There's a lot of fruit on this tree for us as kind of average, ordinary Christians living in the American context. So that's why Scott wrote a great article on it that came out a little over a week ago. And I reached out to the office here at Southeastern. I'm like, man, I'd love to talk about this. And this is right in Scott's wheelhouse, assistant professor of global studies and the director of the Center for Great Commission Studies. So this is in the center of his wheelhouse, to say the least. But where do we kind of, I hate to use the phrase poke holes, but where could this have gone better?
Yeah. Well, okay, first, we don't know where it could have gone better. Let's just make some suppositions. First, okay. You know, I think the first thing that when I look at his, at the strategy as I understand it, and it's even acknowledged by his mission organization, he should have never gone alone. You know, going as part of a team with some partners, there's always protection in that. There's wisdom in that. Counsel, you know, the Bible talks about many witnesses as a counsel brings you some wisdom. And so I think that was probably the number one. Is I'm thinking, hey, let's don't go by ourselves anywhere. Let's make sure that we've got somebody going with us. I think the second thing is, There's a moment as I read this story where he's on an island and he's speaking a language they don't understand.
Right.
And apparently speaking it very loudly. He says he was singing hymns. And for us, that sounds very noble. But if somebody is, you know, is yelling at me, it makes me afraid.
Well, let me go to his journal. And then you brought up a point that's really important about another visitation of this island and what happened as a result, because this is all part of the history of it. You got to look at this in context. So during his next contact, he was in a kayak near the shore. The islanders were yelling. John wrote that as he, quote unquote, sang them some worship songs and hymns, and they would fall silent after this. Then two of them dropped their bows and took a dugout to meet me, a little boat that they had made. I couldn't tell if they were truly unarmed or not, so I still kept a safe distance away and dropped out the fish and gifts. At first, they pulled their dugout past the gifts and were coming at me. Then they turned and grabbed the gifts except for the shovel. I paddled after them and exchanged some more gifts, he wrote. So I preached a bit to them, starting in Genesis, and disembarked my kayak to show that I too have two legs. I was inches from the unarmed guy. It was at this point a young boy shot an arrow at John's chest, which burrowed halfway into his Bible that he was holding out while preaching. The arrowhead was thin, sharp metal. So he's over there,
right,
and he's preaching out of Genesis. But
right,
what good did it do?
Yeah,
I mean literally, because he doesn't speak their language.
That's right, and from everything that we can understand, he doesn't speak their language. I'm not sure anyone. We don't know anybody that does.
Yeah, that does.
And so there is this just matter of what's happening here.
Right.
It seems on our end noble because of the words that we're choosing to say, but when it's not understood on the other end, what are they interpreting?
Yeah.
And there was some fear. And to your point, in their history, there's the story of foreigners showing up on their island, bringing diseases. And so significant percentage of the tribe has died out because of diseases that we are immune to, but we carry.
Yeah.
They don't have the immunity. And so there's this fear, hey, strangers show up, we die.
Yeah, so they're in their history,
right,
which I'm sure they're orally passing down from one generation to the next.
Right.
When people come in from the sea, they bring death with them.
Right.
Now this guy's coming,
right,
and we say, seems like a nice enough chap, right, he's singing, but how do they know he's not singing, I've come to bring you death,
right,
or, you know, that you just don't.
We don't know, and again, let's be clear, what I don't want to do is just criticize the guy.
Right.
But, you know, when we think about what could have gone differently, maybe, you know, a more subtle approach, a slow approach. Was this more aggressive than we intended to be? You go by yourself, so there's not the protection, there's not the wisdom. You know, many counselors, there's wisdom. So there are these things I think that we want to look around. I think the other is on this idea of, is it the responsibility of an American, a Westerner, to be the only one who can take the gospel to a group of people? Maybe there are some near culture people who could have been believers who could have helped with this process. And I don't know, right? But we don't know that he talked to the Christians in India, the Christians in Thailand who were closer by, who could have helped.
Because
with
we tend
process.
To kind of mission impossible ourselves.
That's right.
That I'm Ethan Hawke. And we need to drop in because we have the money and the training and blah, 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 blah. But again, he does not look like the people in that part of the world.
Right.
So you're a foreign agent that way. But like my friend Diego said on Facebook Live, I mean, die risking than never risking at all. And that's the other side of this.
That's right.
We were talking about this during the commercial break. And I said, hey, listen, at least he risked something.
Right.
We won't risk an awkward conversation. to share the gospel with people. If, oh, no, that might burn a bridge, or I might get in trouble at work, whatever. I mean, he risked his life. I agree. He did some things that I think were foolish in his zeal, but you can't knock his zeal.
No.
And you can't knock his brokenheartedness over the lost.
Right.
I mean, when's the last time any of us contemplated breaking any rule or indulging in any awkwardness at all because we were that concerned about the lostness of somebody?
Because
that
we thought
know.
Somebody would die without hearing about Jesus.
We just don't. I mean, give me a break. Right. I mean, maybe you professionals out here do that, but but most of us don't. I mean, I have a lot bigger heart for the lost than I ever did. I'm much more bold. I don't care so much about what people think about me. So I have an easy time getting into gospel conversations now. But 15 years ago, I never thought about it. And I was saved.
Right. No, I think that's exactly right. And I think that's a real lesson to take from this is that the Bible is true. When I wrote this article for the Religion News Service, one of the things that I wanted to emphasize is that the Bible is true and tells a true story about the state of people who don't know Jesus, and that is that they're lost. You know, in John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, whoever believes in him would not perish but have everlasting life. But then the verse following that, he didn't send his son into the world to condemn the world, but that the world through him could be saved. Because if you believe in him, you're not condemned. If you don't, you're already condemned.
You're already condemned.
And so that whole passage in there reminds us that people who aren't Christians are already standing condemned. And that we as Christians have been given the mandate to make disciples of all nations. That includes our neighbors. It includes our coworkers. It includes the people across the world. So the fact that this missionary enterprise, I think, was probably not the wisest attempt and the wisest way to do it, doesn't discount the need and necessity for someone to go, someone to tell, someone to preach. Someone still has to tell these people
that's
about
right.
Jesus.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, context is king, as we often say. In the modern world, you can get information, you can get help, you can find out more, you can do historical research. 1,000 years ago, we didn't have that kind of information.
Right.
So you just go. You can't find out anything about them. There's not the internet. There's not even a card catalog. So you just go. But today is different. The wise way to go, we'll talk about that. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show, Theology Thursday with our friends out here at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. That's in Wake Forest, North Carolina. But it does not matter whether you live in Wake Forest or even the general area, this part of the state, or in this state at all, because there's so many things that you can access about Southeastern and different types of classes. Some you pay for, some are free. Just some incredible resources. And the easy way to see all of that, regardless of where you live, is to go to SEBTS, that's just Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary, but the shortened version, right? Just the initials. SEBTS.edu/radio. And that will land you on a page that Southeastern created just for you guys, which will show you everything that you can access, almost all of it online, some of it free, some of it you pay for. But I was a BSF guy, Bible Study Fellowship guy. I'd been in adult Sunday school class for years, had led one for years. But the first time I came and took a class at Southeastern, I thought I knew something. And then I came out here and I'm like, okay, so I got to get over myself. I'm actually got like more like a fourth grade education, and there's a whole lot more water and a whole lot more depth in this pool than I had experienced. But that's what it's here for. God placed it here for that reason. It doesn't matter whether you're Southern Baptist, if you're serious about your faith and you want to pursue Christ, man, there's so many great opportunities for you. SEBTS.edu/radio. Actually, Evan, put that up on the Facebook page right quick, please, so people can see that. SEBTS.edu/radio. And our good friend Scott Hildreth is no stranger to the show, assistant professor of global studies and the director of the Center for Great Commission Studies. Talking about Jonathan Chow, who is in his 20s, died back on November 17th, trying to reach the Sentinelese people, which is off the coast of India, over that neck of the woods. And they ended up killing him. He made several attempts in his journal, really powerful when you read this. This is the last one I'm going to read, because I want to spend some time with Scott talking about the right, you know, quote unquote, the right way. We say that. I'm going to be careful with that phrase, the right way to do missions. But we'll talk about that, and then the fruit off of this tree for all of us. But here's what he wrote. This is on November 15th, just a month ago. John wrote, "I'm scared. There, I said it. Lord, let your will be done. If you want me to get actually shot or even killed with an arrow, then so be it. I think it could be more useful alive, though. But to you, God, I give all the glory of whatever happens. I don't want in all caps, to die!" Would it be wiser to leave and let someone else continue? No, I don't think so. John also writes, it almost seems like certain death to stay here. Yet there is evidence of change in just two encounters in a single day. We'll try again tomorrow. Man, you got to give him all kinds of props for his zeal.
All kinds of kudos for his faith, for his faithfulness, the passion he has for the lost, the passion he has for the Lord. I think we need to be very careful that we don't criticize a young man with that type of zeal and behavior.
Exactly.
Faith. Genuine faith.
Yeah, and so from a foreign mission standpoint, I mean, I've done several trips. I've done two trips to Africa. I've done a trip to Thailand. I've done a trip to northern Iraq. And sometimes it's kind of got this Ethan Hawke feel to it. We're the Americans who love Jesus and have all the resources. We drop in. We come share the gospel. We get on the plane and go home. But speaking missiologically, which is just a fancy term for doing a mission. So what's some wisdom of how we do foreign missions?
Yeah. I think there are a couple things to keep in mind when we do foreign missions.
And this was part of your article, too.
That's right. Yeah. So in the world today, we have to remember that we are not the only Christians on the planet. And our foreign mission activity needs to always be done in partnership with national Christians. So there are Christians in India. There are Christians in Thailand. There are Christians who live on islands. They live in other places. And so there are times when we engage in our missionary activity in partnership with other people. Some people look at missions history and they see the Westerner going out all by himself, but we have to realize that after several hundred years of doing missions, it's worked. And so we have people who've come to faith in Christ, and so now have national believers that we can partner with and work alongside. And so, again, we asked in the last session, you know, what were some corrections? And I think one would be, don't go at this thing alone. I don't think there's ever real wisdom in going at something by yourself. It may take longer to get it going.
Yeah.
But sometimes we do something longer, and it's deeper because it takes longer. We live in sort of a microwave world. We think everything has to happen quickly. You know, you watch NCIS, and they can solve you know, international terrorism in an hour.
Right.
And missions doesn't happen that way. Take the long view. Discipleship is a lifelong transforming journey. Learning a language, learning a culture, there's a process to be done. If we trust that God can take care of our own life, we have to trust that God is also in charge of the missionary process. And so to rush in to do things feel like a way of doing it a little bit premature is something we have to be very cautious of. So again, take the long view, work with other people.
Which is, there's a tension there in a situation like this with the Sentinelese people, because nobody's reaching them.
Right.
So, you know, every year you wait. Out of those 100 people on the island,
somebody's
dying, a few people are dying and going to hell.
Right.
And you're like, okay, well, it's only two, or it's only five, or, you know,
but
Jesus
somebody.
Leaves the 99 to go after the one, right? And
absolutely.
So there's that tension there that we can't really make go away. But we are called to wisdom. We are called to seek counsel. God tells us that two have a better return for their work for a number of reasons.
Yeah.
And that applies to all of life.
Well, keep in mind that rushing ahead of yourself sometimes means that you actually can't accomplish what your goal was to accomplish. You know, if you don't speak the language and you don't have a solid entry point, or your presence creates problems, then you're actually not. It feels like I've got to do something, but sometimes doing that something, and I don't know about this. But sometimes doing that something could be doing the wrong thing. And
it's one step forward and two steps back.
That's right. And it could be pushing back in the other direction. So the tension that we feel inside ourselves, I've got to do something, needs to be put in check with, but when I go, could I actually accomplish what I'm trying to accomplish?
Yeah.
And I think that's where our missionary zeal should be tempered by advice, wisdom, thinking through taking the long view. You know, where is this thing?
Yeah.
Where could it end up? What's the best first step? And in a situation like this, if it appears that his initial goal was, can we make some positive steps? He writes in his journal, looks like we did, but let me go back another time. And that is that other trip that just was deadly for him. We don't know what happened. Nobody will ever know exactly what happened on that island. And so we have to be, I think, careful not to judge. But there are some areas of wisdom. And again, I think that's what we want people to learn. And that's what we would try to teach here. That's what we would try to communicate to anyone who would call, hey, what are some things we should avoid so that what we do might be more likely to produce.
Well, you want to sow in the field so that you have maximum maximum harvesting. So do we, from a missiological standpoint, when you're training missionaries and kind of going down this road, we look at, let's say, India.
Right.
And there's believers in India. Not many, but they're there. So you have indigenous believers.
Right.
Okay. Then you go to a place like this, but how often, and this is this part of seminary training, hey, we want to go reach people that have never heard the gospel. They're located in such a way that there's nobody there.
Right.
And then is that kind of two schools of thought that you approach? But again, and overarching on top of that, is the need for local indigenous people, even if it's the country next door.
Right.
Especially for us as kind of quote-unquote white Americans.
Westerners, yeah. Westerners. The answer is yes. There are two real schools of thought when it comes to missions practice. One is that you could be more productive by going to receptive people first. So Donald McGovern, pioneer in missions, wrote a book, Bridges to God, where he talks about going to people who are receptive to the gospel first, reach those people, disciple them, and then you can go to those who are least receptive to the gospel. And so that has been a move in missions. So you go to the harvest field first. There's another theory when it comes to missions, and this is started by a guy named Ralph Winter, which was highlighting unreached people groups and saying there are people who are just completely unreached with the gospel. They need to be the focus of our missionary activity. So we go to the unreached, those who no one has ever gone to. If you got a dollar to spend, where do you spend it?
Right.
I want to spend it where Jesus has never been known. Someone said, no, I'm going to spend it where he has been known. Let's basically strike while the iron is hot.
Right,
here the others.
Right.
Can we heat the iron up over here? So those are really two competing schools of missionary strategy. Mm-hmm. And most mission organizations that you talk to today are going to have one of those two or kind of a mixture of those, but that's two real strategies.
Yeah.
And personally, I'm motivated by the need of those who've never heard the gospel. Then the world is just filled with people who need to know Jesus, there are too few people telling them. And so I think as we think about the Great Commission, make disciples of all nations, all peoples, there are just too many. Our statistics will tell us there's, almost 2 billion people who still have very limited, if any, access to the gospel. Somebody has to go tell them. If we spend all of our time with those who are receptive,
right,
then are we actually reaching out? So that's where my heart goes.
Yeah, and it's hard to tell, and that's why we have a body of Christ and not just a person, because we have the ability to do both.
That's right.
There's enough people. There's enough money.
Right.
There's enough resources. There's enough time. There's enough access that we can do both. So then it's really a matter of, and do you see this with students at the seminary, where some of them are like, I want to go to a place that there's a harvest field there and there's some receptivity.
Right.
And others are like, I want to go where there's zero.
That's right. And a lot of it depends on your giftings too. I mean, if you go to a place where there are Christians, the missionary activity looks very different. It's more pastoral. It's more leadership development and training. If you go to a place where there are no Christians, there are a lot of kind of ground level evangelism, sowing seed, praying. And so there are two different skill sets that roll out in this too.
When we come back, we'll talk some more about foreign missions and our role in that. If you've ever been on a foreign mission trip, what's the deal? Should we care more? That the Catholic Church would call it moral proximity. Should you be spending more of your time, talent, and treasure on the people that are closest to you? What role should foreign missions have in your life and in mine? So we'll kind of go a little bit more at the 30,000 foot level when we come back. Talking to my good friend Scott Hildreth. This is Steve Noble. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show, Theology Thursday with our friends at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. Talking about John Chow, who was the young missionary, died back on November 17th, trying to reach the Sentinelese people. So now that we did a show about it, I can finally say it. Sentinelese people off the coast of India in that neck of the woods. Went several times, was writing in his journal, really compelling story. And his zeal, his missionary zeal and his zeal for the lost is absolutely to be commended. And it should be a huge challenge for all of us. He was willing to risk his life to reach the lost with the gospel, people that literally had never heard it, and we're not willing to risk most of us aren't willing to risk an awkward conversation. And so there's a lot of weight that should be falling on all of us where we see a young Christian like this who's so overtaken by his love of the lost that he's willing to risk himself, and most of us never do that. So walking through that, but also looking at, was it the wise approach? Now that we have access to information, we can get more help. God never called us really to work alone. That's not the general thrust of Scripture. Scripture is to work as a body of Christ, and only a fool despises wisdom. Not that I'm calling him a fool, but it would be better to work with others and get some wisdom and approach this and using people that are local to that field. But I asked you a question earlier off the air. I'm going to deal with this one right quick, and then I want to talk about, Scott, from your perspective. We're talking to Dr. Scott Hildreth. What are the lessons for all of us? Kind of quote unquote garden variety, right, normal American Christians, Westerners that love the Lord and say we care about the lost. Mm-hmm. But do we call somebody like John Chow, do we call him a martyr?
Yeah, that's a really, really hard question.
Because generally we say martyr, and that's kind of an esteemed position, right, in the body of Christ, even in Scripture as well.
Absolutely.
Talks about that.
It's a very different, and I'm going to be frank with you, I don't know where to land on that.
You know,
traditionally, a martyr is someone who fits in one of two categories. There's someone who dies directly as a result of their faith, and the other is that someone dies because they won't deny their faith. And since we don't really know what happened here, it's hard to figure which one of these categories a person actually fits in. And so there's actually some discussion, even in my office. We've had debates last week. Hey, where does it come down? And, you know, your intentions don't necessarily mean that you died for what you meant to die for. But certainly that doesn't take away from what we would say are very noble intentions and noble faith. So the idea of martyrdom,
I can't hold a candle to him in terms of his zeal for the lost.
Right. You know, I read something last week, kind of this satirical little thing on maybe Facebook. It said, a man who's never shared his faith in his life denounces missionaries' activity who died
for his faith. To do that, right.
Yeah, so we've had to be very careful that we don't just sit in the back. You know, D.L. Moody one time was criticized by someone, I don't like the way that you share your faith. And he said, well, sometimes I don't like the way I share my faith. Tell me how you do it. To which case the person, well, I don't share my faith. And he said, well, look, then I like the way that I'm doing it a lot better than the way you're not doing it.
Yeah, I like the way I do it wrong.
That's right.
The way you don't do it at all.
Yeah, and so, you know, what are some takeaways from this? I think there are several really important ones, and I would just kind of list them all. First one, a story like this should compel us to do something.
Yeah.
You know, if a guy like this, whether we look at what he did and we think it was probably zeal gone awry or some significant missiological problems, it ought to compel us to ask ourselves, hey, what am I doing? It's a lot easier to sit on the outside and to mock the person on the inside than to do something.
Yeah.
You know, every one of us have people in our lives who need to know about Jesus. God's given every one of us a story to tell, a message about him, and it takes a little bit of creativity and a little bit of courage, but it doesn't take a lot of creativity or a lot of courage. The story is already there.
What a great point. That's right.
The story is already there.
We're not having to write a new screenplay or something.
Get the conversation started.
We all know somebody, and this word picture just came to my mind. We all know somebody who's living on an island of lostness.
Right.
They're separated from God by that ocean, right, of their sin. And then we have a boat, which is our relationship,
right,
an opportunity, and we have the contents that they
That's
need,
right,
which is the gospel. And the question is, are you willing to paddle a little and risk something?
Right.
The worst thing might be, ooh, awkward. Mm-hmm. Oh, you know, oh gosh, you're in one of those. Or it might be rejection.
Right.
It might be the loss of a friendship, perhaps temporarily or permanently. But do we ever risk anything? Yeah. Do we ever lose anything?
Right. Nobody's going to kill you for that.
Right.
And so what's the takeaway? I think there's that, Steve. I think, hey, we look at this and we should really ask ourselves the question, what are we doing? We all have these people who are not believers. I think the second thing is, I think there's a point where in our lives we need to seek to do things wise and with counsel. Don't let our zeal outrun us at points. It should never... fear of doing something wrong should not drive us to not do anything at all, but sometimes we should ask advice, seek wisdom. I'm not saying that John Chow didn't. All indications are that he was in communication with some people. But we should just, you know, seek to be wise, do things as part of a community. God's given us a church. It shouldn't be substitute, you know, somebody's radio show or television show for your church. God puts us in community that we're working with people so that we can get wisdom in our lives, so that we can be equipped and sent out in a way. And so I think those are some real takeaway points from this story.
Does Jesus expect every single follower of his to share the gospel?
I think so. I really do. I think there's...
I don't know how you get around
that. I don't either. And I think that you just look at the Bible and it's clear. And I think if we look at our own lives, think of the reality of what your life was like before you knew Jesus.
Yeah, wow.
And the fact that you now have people in your life who don't have the peace, the joy, the hope that you have, and that can be found in a relationship with Christ, and you have that in your hand.
Yeah.
You know, it's a formerly starving man taking bread to a starving man and saying, hey, look, this is what we have here. I was just reminded of the story in the Bible where the blind man received his sight, the people come say, hey, what happened? He said, look, I don't know what happened. You know, I just know that I used to be blind,
I love this guy, yeah.
but now I can see. And that's what most of us need to say to people around us.
Right.
Why are you different? What? And you say, look, I don't know. I just know I used to be blind. I met this man named Jesus. Now I can see. Can I just tell you what I can do? So what happens is we usually say, you know, I'm afraid. Well, what are you afraid of? I mean, really, at the end yeah. of the day. And then we say, there are going to be some questions they're going to ask me. I won't know the answer to those questions. Man, those questions are not going to come. And if they do, just say, look, you know, I don't know, but I can go find the answer.
Yeah, and plus Jesus flat out told us, don't worry about what you're going to say.
Right.
Get over that. You
right.
just need to get into the conversation. And it'll get, all right, so I think all of us are in agreement. Absolutely, Jesus expects every one of us to be sharing the gospel with the lost. Does he expect all of us to go on foreign mission trips? Because I think here in America, man, I used to get all puffed up about that.
Yeah.
Have you ever gone on a foreign mission trip? As a matter of fact, I've been on four.
Right.
But is that, if you don't go on a foreign mission trip and you're a Christian that lives in America, are you wrong? Are you lacking in faith? Are you a B grade Christian versus an A grade?
So what I think Jesus wants us all to do is be world Christians. That is, we need to be people whose heart is bent toward the Great Commission, toward the nations. Not all of us have the opportunity or the resources to go on the foreign mission
right.
field. But I think our bent ought to be in that direction, as opposed to being bent in the, there's no way you could ever get me to go there. I don't even have a passport. I would never get on an airplane. I don't want to talk to a Muslim. I don't want to eat strange food. So I think what Jesus wants from his faithful disciples, are you bent in the direction of fulfilling the Great Commission, sharing the gospel with people who need to know? What can I do in that direction? If you're bent that way, let's just see if the opportunity, the resources yeah. come up in your life.
Yeah, and I think that's an important thing to be praying about that and be looking for those opportunities. And listen, there are plenty of people, and I think God calls us to be a cheerful giver. He doesn't need your money. He
right.
wants you to grow through that and to learn through that. And to be a cheerful giver, he wants that to be something that's coming out of your heart. And I think you have to go, if you're going to go on a foreign mission trip, you got to do it for the same reason.
Right.
If I'm doing it because I feel like, I guess I should go because, you know, it's like the bumper sticker. I owe, so off to work I go. And a real Christian goes on the foreign mission trip.
Yeah.
And if you're doing that or you're trying to get something from God for it, he's going to be, no.
Right.
Sorry, you don't get any credit for that because your reasoning's wrong. The one thing I see about foreign mission trip, and it happened to me, the first time I ever shared the gospel with a stranger was in Africa. And then when I came back, I'm like, okay, why don't I do this in my own backyard?
Yeah.
Because I can get away with it there. I got nothing to lose. Well, what kind of Christian am I? And it set me, when I came back from Kenya in 2002, I was, and people that knew me in the church I was at the time would tell you, I was radically transformed.
Yeah.
And that was before Call to Action. That was before radio. So that was just like the spike in my life to show me. There's another level of Christianity here that I didn't really know it existed.
Right.
And that was through the gospel, the Great Commission, reaching the lost in other places, and then having a zeal for your neighbor.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Our experience here, and we take hundreds of students a year on short-term mission trips, is that they can be life-transforming. Your faith can grow. You can have a relationship with God like you've never. Your prayer life is transformed.
Yeah.
I would encourage any person who has the opportunity and the resources to take advantage of some type of mission trip.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I tell all these young people that I teach, and I'll say it as frankly on the air as I say it in class. I'll say, listen, you're an American kid growing up. You're a Christian family. You need to – this is exactly how I say it, so forgive me. You need to get the hell out of America as fast as you can because you think your compass is set on true north.
Mm.
It isn't.
Right.
Living in America, for the most part, for most of us, relative to the world, is like living in Disneyland. It's like the movie Jim Carrey did, Truman.
Right.
He didn't know the whole thing was a farce.
Right.
So in America, for me to go see how most of the world lives was a real eye-opener and helped me to appreciate the fact that God dropped me by his providence in America. And then it began to open up a lot of other things in me. But I tell him, listen, you think your compass is right. It isn't. You need to go get it set on true north. See what reality is. See what the rest of the world is like. And then it made me appreciate my life here a whole lot more.
Amen. That's a great, great, great observation.
Scott Hildreth, Assistant Professor of Global Studies, talking about John Chow today. Thanks, brother. It's been great.
Thank you, Steve.
You're very welcome. Okay, friends, and just a reminder, we talk about this just about every day, but I would be remiss if I didn't remind you about our friends at MediShare. Again, we talk about that. We checked that out years ago for the Noble family when literally Health insurance was becoming unaffordable for us. MediShare, over 300,000 Christians nationwide. This is a medical sharing ministry. It is a ministry. So you're helping other Christians. They're helping you with major medical expenses. Really an awesome, awesome opportunity. I hope you'll check it out. Just give them a call. 844-744-BIBLE is their phone number. 844-744-BIBLE. This is Steve Noble on the Steve Noble Show. God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon. And like my dad always said, ever forward.